everybody. Welcome back to the Midnight Terrors podcast. My name is Kevin. We are back with another episode, and I'm here with you know her, you love her. She is the live co-host for MTP, as well as we're trying to get her on the show once a month to talk about some more movies because we do like to do this for fun and not, always in front of a large group of people with a lot of other things going on. So we're back with a monthly episode, and please welcome back my co-host and also the prez of Charleston's Absent Friends, as well as many hats within CAF. It is Jules.
I am literally wearing one of my hats right now, and it has a jack-o'-lantern on it. So that's perfect for this episode. But yeah, I think we should call this our Spooky Bestie series because
I like it.
if you tuned into the start of our Hitch, yeah, if you tuned into the start of our Hitchcock series, that also was the kickoff of our Spooky Bestie series, where we're kind of challenging each other to come up with a movie every other month. So I started January with The Birds. Check that episode out if you're into Hitchcock or just want to dip your toes into Hitchcock. That sounds horrible, but you get the point. And then this month was Kevin's turn because we're alternating. And then spoiler, if y'all want to tune in March, I think we're going to go with Ghost Ship. It's
Ah,
one of my
yes.
guilty pleasures, one of my absolute guilty pleasures. I love that movie. So yeah, so Kevin, I'll let you introduce this movie since this is your pick and part two of our Spooky Bestie series.
I like that. I think I'm gonna go back and retroactively like rename the episode so it says Spooky Bestie Series Episode One
Yes. Yes,
with the
we're
movie
getting to the
title.
point where we're getting to the point where it's like a series within the series because it was, like I said, the Hitchcock series, but it was also the start of this new spooky bestie thing that we're doing in 2025. Just to really, I've been so present at the live events and I love those, but it's really just to challenge myself to do some stuff behind the screen as well. So thank you guys for tuning in for this throughout the year. I think we're going to have a lot of fun with it.
Absolutely. And so like you said, this time around I picked something for us to watch. And I'm very excited about this. I think I've name dropped this movie on the podcast and at live events probably 100 times. This is an underrated gem in my book. We are talking about 2006's Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon. Very long title, but an awesome title. Had you ever heard of this movie, Jules, before I mentioned it?
Absolutely not. And it's quite a mouthful as well. When I was trying to remember the name, I was like, Behind the Mask. Yeah, The Rise of Leslie Vernon. It's a mouthful, but it really makes sense that it's a mouthful. Once you get into the movie, I think it makes it even more fun.
Absolutely. And I went with this one because we just at the end of January, we were at a book club meeting with our friends in the Charleston Society of Horror. We talked about the Final Girls Support Group by our friend of the show, Grady Hendrix. We had a big book club meeting about that. So we were really in Final Girl mode. We also went to a Grady Hendrix event and got to meet him for the second time. Hopefully, we'll get him back on the show sometime this year. But we, coming off the Final Girl talk and just talking about like tropes in horror and like character blueprints, I thought that this one would be an appropriate follow-up slash counterpart to the Final Girl support group. Because this kind of flips the script and goes away from the Final Girls to essentially the killers side of the thing, of the movie. I'm excited to dive into this. What did you think of Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon?
I mean, you know me. I love camp. I love silliness. I love over the topness. And this is all of those things. It is a mockumentary. So super fun if you love those kinds of things. And basically, it's a team of people who decide to follow this kind of serial killer in training, to learn his ways. And it's very questionable because from the beginning, I'm like, you guys know you're all accessories to murder, right? You're just letting all of this happen. You're watching the planning and the follow through and all of those things. So I'm not gonna lie, I have questions. I have questions about where these people end up and if they are in jail or not. But that aside, little plot holes like that aside, which again, I'm a fan of plot holes because you know what? Life doesn't make sense, guys. It just doesn't make sense. So give me plot holes all day. But that's essentially what it is, a team of people following someone who wants to be the equivalent of all of your faves, Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, Michael Myers, Charles Lee Ray. Those are all of his idols, essentially. And I remember, Kevin, when you were kind of pitching this movie to me, which I'm going to say yes at the end of the day to anything, I'll watch anything once. You were like, yeah, it's this guy, and he refers to all of these horror icons as like Mike and Fred and you know, Jay. I think someone called Jason Jay, you know. So he very much looks up to them and wants to be like them. And it's just, again, so fun for horror fans because it's going through all the classic elements of a slasher film. So really fun in that way. And then on top of it, you have a cool little slasher storyline too at the end of the day. That's fun too, full of all the typical things. They say, what is it, Survivor girl instead of final girl. But it's the same idea. You have your final girl. I remember when they were going around, they basically pulled up to a school. It looked very much just like a scene from Scream or even Scary Movie 1 or 2. You know, it's like this group of kids, so typical. And Leslie Vernon, the killer, who's the star of this, he's sitting there and he's explaining. So the whole movie, the mockumentary, is him explaining to these filmmakers how he goes about picking his victims. So that was really fun to see him sit back and be like, you know, there's the stoners, there's the jock, there's the virgin. It was especially fun for me because Kevin and I, we wrapped from filming towards the end of last year, but it is still filming other scenes and still and going to be in post-production and everything for a while. But we filmed our first little horror movie last year, and we are the stoner characters. So it was hysterical throughout the movie to see the two stoner characters sitting on the couch. I was like, that's Kevin and me,
I'm so glad you
literally.
caught that.
Yeah, I was like, this is hysterical. So our director, the movie, by the way, it should hopefully debut at some point this year or next year. It's gonna be called Don't Bury the Dead. The directors are our friends, Justin and Michael. But that's clearly where they got all of this inspiration, you know, when Justin was writing this initially. It's just these classic slasher traditions, really. So if you're a fan of really any sort of a slasher film, I think that this is a really good time. Again, as long as you can laugh, guys, that's the whole point of it. This is not a super serious movie. It's meant to make you laugh. It's meant to be silly. So that's my long initial droning on about my first impression. So I'll pass it to you. What draws you back to this movie and makes you want to rewatch it, or what do you love about it?
I think for me, it's kind of fitting that there's like insane plot holes in here. Like, what the hell is wrong with these characters that they would be accessory to
Yeah.
not even just murder, but like a massacre that's being planned? And I think that
Yep.
what I love about this movie is that, people talk about like the golden age of horror being the 80s, where we're seeing a lot of those slashers like Freddy and Jason and Michael and Chucky. And like for me, like that's, yes, It 1990 is my favorite horror movie, but the 80s horror is like my bread and butter. I can always go back to that well, and be entertained. And so I think this movie takes that kind of similar to the way Scream did in the 90s. It kind of harkens back to that while also just like having fun with the absurdity of the 80s. Like, why does Michael want to hunt Laurie constantly? Why is Freddy a jokester? Like, why does Jason just never die? And things like that. And I think that this movie absurdly but lovingly is like a nod to those characters and just takes this whole new fun twist of like, because the reason they mention the serial killers, the famous killers from slasher movies in this one, is that it's like in the same world. And to Leslie and like his I think these are his parents that we see at one point. These are the killers are like real people and friends of theirs. And I just think that it's such a throwback to the 80s, but also again, diving into the tropes like we did with, Final Girl Support Group. And anytime a movie can do that and put a fun twist on it, like this mockumentary style that we see with Leslie, I think that's what is just something that's always going to get me hooked. And when I saw this one, there's so many funny jokes in this one. Whereas, Final Girl Support Group and Scream have their like heavy moments. I don't think this movie ever takes itself seriously.
Oh, I would 100% agree. It's just a good time because a lot of movies in horror you have to kind of build yourself up for. I've talked to you about Terrifier 1. How many years? I think it's, I don't even know. I think it was 5+ years for me to work up to actually watching Terrifier. I'm working my way through it, guys. Don't rush me. It'll probably be another 5 years before I watch the second one. Sorry, Kevin, because I still have your Blu-ray.
That's okay.
Yeah, but it's absolutely nothing like that. It would be such a good first horror movie for somebody because it is so funny constantly. It doesn't take itself too seriously. And it's honestly not super gory. Like, I just think it's a really good, fun movie for people you want to introduce to the horror genre. Or if you just are like, you know what, I just can't handle something heavy tonight or super gory, or I think it's a really good pick in the horror genre. But before we dive in any deeper, can we talk about the horror gems, the actors and the actresses from the horror world that are actually in this movie?
You read my mind.
Zelda Mae Rubens, yep, Zelda Mae Rubenstein is the medium from Poltergeist.
Yes.
Hello, icon. She plays the librarian, who's a little part of the story, of who you think is the final girl. And that's something we'll come to later, is there's a wonderful plot twist that I love in this movie as well. I always love a good plot twist. It keeps me on my toes. So we also have Scott Wilson, who is The Walking Dead's Herschel. So I'm a big Walking Dead fan. Again, I waited like 10 years or something to finally watch it, and I watched it over the past year or two. Love it. I love Herschel's character. It was so fun to see him back, and he's actually kind of playing like a retired killer of sorts. And I love he has this talk with Leslie about how, back in the day it was really about the quantity of the work you did, and now it seems more about the quality. So it's so funny to hear this person talk about what it was like killing back in the day, just like you're talking about, I don't know, what it was like playing baseball or something when you were a kid. So love that. And then of course the big one, Kevin, I don't know if you want to do the reveal of the big one. I think you know who I'm talking about.
Oh, I do. I was just at a con with this man this past weekend. We are, of course, talking about the one and only Freddy Krueger himself, Robert Englund, as the essentially the Loomis character for this movie.
Yes, he plays Doc Halloran. So I was really excited as soon as he popped up. I was so proud of my partner Nikki. She was like, "Oh, he's playing like the psychology character." Didn't get Dr. Loomis's name because she self-admittedly doesn't remember names, but it's that obvious and it's that hysterical. Like, it is
Which
Loomis step by step, word for word. It is his vibe, it's his outfit. It's just, it is Loomis.
did you also kind of, I might be stretching on this one, but with there being so many horror nods in here, his name, Doc Halloran, I thought of Dick Halloran from The Shining.
Oh, yeah, that could absolutely be it. I didn't think about that in the moment, but I could see that just like going into the Final Girl Support Group stuff again. I mean, we love stuff like this. That's just paying homage to things we love and bringing it back around for a new generation. Like, movies like this are going to cause people to go, oh, well, now I need to watch like all these stereotypes. Like, where did they come from? Who is the Loomis character? Let me go watch Halloween and see who Loomis is. So He is just such a great character, Loomis, as well as Doc Halloran, the fake Loomis. But basically, he's the character, and Leslie is explaining all of this as you go, and it's hysterical. He's just explaining it all, and he says it that he's somebody willing to defend the good of humanity at all costs. So you have to have the Doc Halloran, you have to have the Loomis character to be a good slasher movie. So it's almost like if you want to write a slasher movie, watch this mockumentary, take notes, and then make all of these characters, and you have a recipe. It's like slasher movies for dummies. That's what this
Yeah.
is. It really is.
It would have been right at home if they had pulled out a book that said Slashing for Dummies or something in the
Yes.
movie.
Yes.
Shout out real quick also to Zelda Rubinstein, because only a few years ago I saw a great movie of hers that I had never seen and absolutely loved, Teen Witch.
Oh, nice. I don't think I've seen that one.
Great 80s rom-com mystical movie, very fun. And then there's another cameo in here that is like blink and you miss it. And I'm looking there like, is that who I think it is? At the beginning, montage, which I love this opening where Taylor is our person that is the head of this crew. She's doing this opening to the documentary about famous slashers. And at one point, she tries to ask a question to a man who just kind of like looks back real quick and then goes into his house and doesn't say a word. That is Mr. Kane Hodder, who played Jason in 7 through like Jason X in the Friday the 13th movies.
Wow, that would be a blink and you miss it because I mean, Jason's face is like covered 99% of the time. So, how would you even recognize that if you weren't a super fan? Like, I don't know, Kevin, the host of this podcast. So,
Funny,
job well done on that.
thank you. I can't help but notice him because I met him last year and I got shoved by him very
Oh
lovingly,
my
but it caught me
gosh.
off guard and he's very strong, so I almost fell over. But yeah, there's a lot of great nods in here, and kind of like as we walk through, I just want to shout out I believe his name is Nathan Basil, I think is how you say his last name. Him, excuse me. Nathan as Leslie, our title character, is just so much fun. He's got so much charisma, but he can, turn from being funny to really creepy when he goes after Taylor for interacting with the survival girl. But I think he's really, really fun, and I think he just owns the screen whenever he's talking.
He kept reminding me, and I don't even know if anyone listening has ever seen this, but if y'all have seen iCarly, he reminds
Yes.
me of Carly's older brother, Spencer. And the whole time I was like, Spencer? Like my brain was almost confused, but he's that energy, and I love Spencer. So of course I love this
Same.
character of Leslie. Just like what you said, he's dripping with charisma. He's just always smiling. He enjoys what he does. He's honoring these time-old traditions. And he basically it's his honor to die by the final girl or the survivor girl. It's his honor. So this whole thing, whether he lives or dies or whatever, it's just completing this process for him as his big goal in life. So you're just following this whole journey of him basically committing his ultimate mass murder, just like you're at Camp Crystal Lake. That's the quality of this. And he's planned it bit by bit, person by person, every single thing. The place where the mass murder occurs, he goes and he sets everything up. And I remember they ask, "Isn't this cheating?" And he's like, "No, I'm preparing." So he has windows nailed shut. He has axes that look like you can grab them, but he's already halfway broken them. So when you swing it the first time, it breaks. So it really goes behind the scenes because we don't ever really think about this, do we? We go, "How did Michael Myers, have so much success? How did Freddy Krueger, all these characters that we know and love, how were they so successful?" And with Leslie Vernon, he's like, "You got to do cardio all the time because everyone's running and I have to make it look like I'm walking."
That's my favorite joke in the entire
Right? Oh
movie.
my gosh, that was just so amazing. So kudos to the writers of the screenplay because it's really just honestly a love affair with horror. through and through the whole movie.
Which you, I mean, you hit the nail on the head right there. That is like, this movie's like, picture if Michael or Freddy or Jason or Chucky made a documentary, like, as they're about to go on their killing spree. And then they add just like fun elements of like, why do they choose to do this? Like, clear nod to Halloween. At one point, Leslie is looking at who we believe to be the final girl. And she looks back, doesn't see him, and he's like, see that, how we sensed each other? And that's just like making me think of Lori looking back when no one's there. You know, he talks about the flyby shot, you know, like Michael driving in the car, just so the final girl can get a good look at him for a second. There's just so many fun things like that. But he's also just looking at everything he's doing with such glee as well. One line that I hadn't caught before but made me laugh really hard the other night is when he's setting up the final massacre, he's talking about how he's killed someone and he's going to plant the bodies in certain locations so he can scare the other people. And he's like, now that I've killed this one person, I can use this body to put this here and scare the poop out of the next kid that goes in there. He's just, he's so like just looking at it with like childlike eyes with everything he does.
Yes, and what's so fascinating is Leslie has planned all of this. So, like, when I watch Halloween, I'm like, oh, well, Michael Myers is just flying by the seat of his pants. So he kills someone, he puts him here. He kills someone else, he throws him here. No, that's not Leslie's story. So then it makes me question everything. I'm like, did Michael plan all of this out when he was in the institution? Did he plan all of this out? Literally every single time that there's a kill and what he does with that body, it has been planned. Every single bit of it, he thought about it first. And that's why it's so hard to beat somebody like this, because he has thought about everything before you even get to the scene of the crime. He has thought about everything. So good luck trying to beat this guy.
Exactly. I mean, he's down to little details. Like, I just have a note that says this man has a string on the brick to hold the door open for a second and then close it when the girl gets stuck outside of her restaurant that she works at. It's just, I think that's another great element, is just like filling in like the whys of slasher films with like just these absurd ideas that make it fun. You know, like if you know your slasher movies, you're going to have a fun time with these like little nods to the genre and the explanations. And if you don't know your slasher films, I agree with you that I think this is a great way to get acquainted with it. And you also get a brand new killer, which I have to say, Leslie Vernon's costume and just him as a killer, I also love. I think he's a great looking villain.
Oh yeah, that's why I mentioned at the beginning, like, yes, this is fun. It's really meant to be a horror comedy, but then towards the last, what, third or so of the movie, when it's actually D-Day, it is time for the killings that he's been planning for. He is pretty terrifying. He really is. He's very smart. He's thought ahead. He's planned. He has a creepy ass mask, creepy outfit. Yeah, I think that you end up, even though it's very funny, the whole movie, you still get a good little horror story in there that's enjoyable if you like a good slasher film. I also love, I have to mention this, he brings up that there has to be phallic elements all the time. So, like, I think the axe was an example. It's long, and you know, people choose this because it's phallic. And then the flip side of it, whenever the final girls are running, they're bringing up like going into this kind of like a creepy, ominous like gateway outside that looks like a birth canal. So it's yonic. So you have the phallic and the yonic and the male and the female representations, which, you know, this is all what Leslie thinks, right? So who knows? I mean, I just want to grab an axe personally because it's something I could kill you with. But hey, Leslie, if you want to think it's because it looks like a big peen, maybe it is for some people. But for me, I just want you to be killed. But I did think that was interesting, and I appreciated that he wasn't just focused on phallicisms, but he was also talking about the female representations throughout horror legacies as well. I thought that was kind of neat.
Well, I think again, going back to Final Girl Support Group, this actually ended up being more of like an even better counterpart to that book or accessory to that book than I anticipated, because Leslie really, like, yes, they have to fight in the story that he's crafted, but Leslie really holds up the final girl in his story as like the hero and the person who has to walk away with the victory. Like, he knows he has to die by her hand.
Yep. Well,
And
that's how a survivor girl is created, right? She survives. So that is his whole purpose, really. Like I said earlier, he is honored to die by her hand. She is the other half of the coin. And it is so true. Like, think about the great slasher films of, the past 50 years. You have Ghostface and Sydney. You have Freddy and Nancy. You have Laurie Strode and Michael. You can't have one without the other. It just doesn't make sense that way. And that kind of leads to into the big plot twist, which I loved, was that the person you think is the survivor girl or the final girl is not. So it ends up this girl, I think her name was Kelly Curtis, was the perceived final girl.
Yes.
It ends up she is not a virgin, right? And that this whole thing was actually planned. I think she ends up right in a D at some point in the movie.
That
You're like, oh, wow.
is a hilarious reveal where they realize that she is not a virgin, and because the camera crew runs in and is wanting to save Kelly, and they're like, "Oh, I think she's upstairs," which I'm glad you picked up on the stoner characters, because my note just says the stoner characters are going to be stoned, and I just wrote serious Jesse and Darren energy right there. But they run upstairs, and yeah, Kelly's doing like reverse cowgirl on a dude. And they're like, oh, she is definitely not a virgin. It is a very funny moment. And you find out that the twist is that Taylor, the head of the film crew that we've been following, is actually the final girl in Leslie's story. And I agree. I think that's a great twist going on.
Yeah, and I just have one question written down, okay, for Taylor, again, the head of the film crew. She's kind of like almost like the host or the MC of this whole thing. She's the one asking the questions to everybody. So, as you're learning from Leslie Vernon, all these rules, I think the virgin thing is mentioned in the first 5 to 10 minutes of the movie. Wouldn't you get worried if you were a virgin making this documentary? Wouldn't you get worried? So, again, maybe another little plot hole. I'm obsessed with it, though. I think it's hysterical because that's how people really are. People really think, oh, this won't apply to me. What are the chances? Like, yeah, I'm a virgin, but he has a virgin, right? Girl, if you're a virgin, I'd be worried. You're hanging out with Leslie Vernon for days and weeks, if not more than that. And I know we just mentioned too, the film crew walks in and sees and realizes Kelly is not a virgin. On that same note, the film crew, it obviously throughout the movie, they have a change of heart when it comes to the actual killing, and that starts. They're basically all like, "Oh shit, are we really gonna sit here and let this happen?" So they all run outside. And there's a confrontation between Leslie and Taylor, where you think they go their separate ways, essentially. Leslie goes back in the house to continue his killing spree, his master plan. And then you think Taylor's gonna maybe leave or go try to save people. And then it ends up that Taylor is part of the whole plan the entire time. So talk about a master plan. I mean, he. Not only did he have one final girl, he had two. One was a fake. I mean, talk about the most elaborate plan I've probably ever heard from a slasher to date. So kudos to Mr. Leslie Vernon on this master plan.
For sure. And one element of the movie that I think is really cool is there are essentially two mysteries going on. There's the one that Leslie is creating, that we are following his staging, but we also find out that he's not really who he says he is. His name's not Leslie Vernon. He has a different, last name. And Robert Englund, Doc Halloran, is like, I know who he is. You don't really know who you're involved with. And like, then there's like the story of Leslie wants to get away from how people were perceiving him. And so he creates his own backstory, and he changes his name and, things like that. And I think that I've never seen like parallel story writing that way. And the fact that they're able to balance it in the way they are is actually pretty brilliant.
It is. It really is. And that brings up I don't know if you remember the planting of things. So whenever you think Leslie is after Kelly, the original perceived final girl, he actually ends up basically altering newspaper articles and all these different things that Kelly will find to build up to this backstory that he's created for himself. So he's literally all of these clues that you think final girls just happen upon in your typical slasher. He has actually set all of this up. He's set it in the library for Kelly to find. So I think that even takes it to a whole other level. It makes you wonder with all of these killers we've met over the years, it's like, what's real and what's not? Are you just doing some of this to scare the shit out of people? Maybe so.
And especially in this day and age with just being so driven by social media and like our online persona, people will do weird shit to kind of make their story known. And one so we talked about at one point, like we talked the I think it's Leslie's parents talk about like the rules. They talk to the camera crew about like, if you're in one of these stories, you stay away from the Virgin, don't fight us off, keep running, make sure one person is left behind to die. And my note, just said like, these are definitely like 80s rules. And a
Oh, yeah.
question I had that I thought we could dive into is, so over this past weekend, for those listening, I was at Mad Monster in North Carolina, and one of the wonderful guests that I got to meet was Danielle Harris. And we had Mama Midnight and I had a little chat with her just about like what I do on the show with my friends and family. And then we were talking with her about Final Girls, and Danielle brought up a great point of the concept of the Final Girl is ever changing. Like, it changes with the times, comes back around in new ways. And like, as I'm looking at these rules that are established in the movie, these definitely feel like 80s rules. But my question is, do we think any of these rules still apply when it comes to new horror movies? Like, are these still relevant, or have they, fallen by the wayside with the times? What do you think?
I mean, I feel like so many of these are still alive and well, honestly. Like, and Leslie went over so many of the rules throughout the movie too, as he's kind of explaining his process. Like rule number one, I think he said, was no one gets away. So that's one. Killing couples who are, of course, having sex. That's another one. Don't hide, don't look back. I thought this was fun. He had a rule that he will never grab somebody in the closet. I thought that was funny. It reminds me a lot. If anyone plays Dead by Daylight, it reminds me of all the lockers and stuff that we hide in and whatnot. This whole movie reminded me of Dead by Daylight, honestly. It was pretty hysterical in that way, too. But I really think a lot of these are still so alive and well. I mean, look at the movie that we just made. You know, who's one of the first people to die? The slut character. You know, who's the comic relief? The stoner characters. I feel like maybe having to be a virgin is maybe fading out a little bit, you know. I feel like that's one that's not as classic anymore. I think that you can be a badass and have fucked however many people you want to. But I still think that a lot of these are seen throughout horror. Not all horror, but maybe more typical slashers. Those elements are there.
Yeah, I can't remember what if it was a movie or if it was a podcast that I was listening to, but I heard a point recently where someone was talking about the final girl like not having to be like the good girl when they step into that role, and how that's kind of gone away, which I think honestly is for the better because it feels more human. One movie that you and I definitely will get to probably in October is Halloween 2018, which I think
Oh.
was such a game changer in the genre because we got Laurie back, but she was like T2 Sarah Connor in that one. You know, she had had her struggles, but she came back from them and was a badass and is still, you know, our final girl 40 years later. And I
Yeah.
think that concept of like characters don't have to be perfect to survive is so much more grounding because we don't have to be perfect to get through our problems, you know?
Yeah. And I hope that Lori's not a virgin at that point in her life. You know, let's hope. I mean, unless she wants to be, if unless she wants to be.
It's
But if she wanted booty, I hope she got booty by that point in her life.
Jamie Lee Curtis. I'm sure she got plenty.
I mean, come on. But you know how much I love, the Halloween franchise and Jamie Lee Curtis in particular. I have an action figure of her from that particular movie. And that just really, I almost love her more as she ages because I have two words, fuck ageism. Fuck
Yep.
it hard. Fuck it hard. You can be beautiful. You can be powerful. You can be strong. You can be intelligent. You can be all the things we associate with younger people when you are older and when you are aging. And I mean, there is not a better character in my mind in the horror genre to show that. I mean, like you're saying, it really was pretty original in that way. Like your final girl of a major franchise is a woman, what, in her 50s, 60s at that point. I'd have to look up the exact age at the time, but how powerful is that just to show life doesn't end. You don't stop being powerful. You don't stop being anything just because you're aging, and just the fortress she builds in that man. Well, we have to stop talking about it now because I will spiral out of control into a Jamie Lee Curtis and Halloween tangent. But
I
I love that
think.
you brought that up because she's really a great example of how that can change and change over time with the same character.
Yeah, and I think that again that movie is relevant 'cause you one of the movies we're talking about for our live event coming up this Friday for Valentine's month is Ready or Not. And Samara Weaving's character for that movie is again another like really strong final girl. She's not perfect, but she overcomes everything, and I think that The Rise of Leslie Vernon is such a snapshot on where horror was at that time, because this was essentially 10 years after Scream, which was already starting to shake things up. Because look at Sydney, she's not a virgin, and she's, you know, the final girl for that entire franchise mostly. But I think Leslie Vernon is, especially because this was 2006 and horror was at such a changing point at this, you know, point in time, and like slashers weren't really the thing anymore. It was more like supernatural and torture porn and, you know, things like that. So I think this is just a really interesting snapshot on where horror was at the tail end of the 90s and going into the 2010s when it was kind of brought back as the slashers were coming back.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And on that Halloween note, I have to mention this too. And again, Nikki, my partner, actually caught this. She was like, "Did you see that?" And I was like, "No." There's a split moment where there is a knife on a counter in the kitchen where you see Leslie's reflection in it, just like Michael Myers, the classic. I mean, I have a shirt with it. It's posters, it's images, it's everything. So you have that little nod to Michael Myers when you see his reflection in the knife. And it's again one of those blink and you miss it moments, but man, when you catch these little things, it's just the detail work that the people behind this movie did. It's just really meaningful. And horror nerds everywhere, I can't imagine you not appreciating this movie for one reason or another.
Yeah, and I think that's a great way to sum up the movie. Why I personally go back to it a lot is I have, and I'm sure you and Nikki have these as well, but comfort movies.
Oh, yeah.
And like watching Leslie Vernon, like when I first got into horror, I was watching Friday the 13th and Freddy and Halloween, some of the Chucky and like all these like 80s horror movies. So, you know, it remains my number one, but I talk about it as this kind of like I'm at home when I'm watching this, and like that's how I feel about those 80s movies. You know, like every time Terrorvision and Terrace Theater do a Friday the 13th screening or something, like I'm there, because like that's my just reminds me of when I first got into horror, and I think Leslie Vernon captures that perfectly, and it just has a feel-good element to it, and again, just has fun with the absurdity that we all know is part of these movies, but it does it so lovingly and brings it into a new generation. So.
Absolutely. I also have to mention, I thought it was nice. There's this part whenever Leslie's explaining everything to the film crew, and there's an apple press, like a juicer. And you know, they were asking, like, what is this for? Like, what are you going to use this for? And my cat is scratching at the door, guys. So if you hear a terrifying sound in the background, that is just a cat. It's not Leslie Vernon. Of course, she does this when I'm recording something. The apple press. So they're like, what is this used for? And it's just kind of like, to make apple juice, you know? And then it ends up being the thing that our final girl uses to kill him. And I love that because I have those moments when I'm watching TV shows and movies when I'm like, they're spending too much time on this random thing. This is going to end up being something major. And I had that feeling. I was like, what is up with this frickin' apple press? And it ends up that his head is pressed. So I thought that was really kind of a unique death as well that I appreciated.
Absolutely. And I also we it really only comes up at the end of the movie, but I also love the setting we're in with the farmhouse and the apple orchard. I just think it's a really fun place for a finale, and also one aspect of the filmmaking that I really like is as you're watching the movie, a good chunk of it in the first half is the mockumentary style, but every so often they'll cut to like you're watching an actual movie, and then the second half of the movie they completely do away with the mockumentary style, and you're watching a straight up slasher that they built for the first hour of the movie, and I think that payoff is brilliant, but the fact that they're able to juggle those qualities of film so seamlessly, with Leslie's commentary and like the commentary of Taylor is, I think, brilliant. I've never seen a movie do that.
Yeah, and it's really seamless. It's like it's during that scene basically I described earlier where you see Leslie and Taylor kind of have that disagreement where they decide to not really work together because she can't stand by and just watch him kill anymore. So I feel like that's the moment where the fake documentary ends, right? Taylor's documentary ends at that point, and she is now part of the story, just part of the story of Leslie. She's no longer just recording it. She's in the thick of it. So I think that that's a brilliant way, a seamless transition, like you're saying, from the mockumentary style to just being in a slasher film, essentially.
Absolutely. Did you this is one scene that I did, kind of wonder like what was going on in their heads. You mentioned it. Leslie and Taylor and the camera crew have this really like heartfelt goodbye before he goes on his killing spree. They're not like screaming at each other or anything. They did have one face off earlier when they violated his rule of interacting with the final girl. But after that, they
Yeah,
seemed
that
to
got scary.
Yeah, when Nathan, when he, as Leslie, when he switches from the funny guy to the scary one, especially when he puts on his mask, it's very Michael Myers. He loses his humanity, and the one camera guy's like, "Dude, it's me, it's me," and he doesn't care.
Yep.
But it seemed really heartfelt, their goodbye, and like he obviously planned for Taylor to be involved. I just, it's fascinating. I wonder what was in his head with that, because he seems to again look at Taylor like very lovingly, but he knows he has to die, but it's also like a goodbye, and he said, "Don't interfere with my work." It's a very interesting psychological thing there.
Yeah, it very much is. And especially because his whole plan, essentially, when you look back on it, it hinges on Taylor choosing to go back and save people. So it's like he was, again, counting on the survivor girl, this final girl, to be this stand-up human being that we're used to being, the good girl, the nice girl. And she does exactly that. But like, what if in that moment Taylor was like, fuck it, and hit the road? Then his entire plan would have gone out the window. But that's how brilliant it is he knows how these different people and these personalities are going to behave in these situations. And you mentioned the farmhouse too. It was in I don't know if this is a real town or city, Glen Echoes, Maryland. I thought that was fun because Maryland's my other home state. state. It's the
That's
only
right.
other state I've ever lived in. So I was like, oh, it's Maryland. That's fun. That doesn't happen a lot. And another quick mention, it is right at about 1 hour and 31 minutes. I feel like that is just such a fun length of a movie. When it gets to be over 2 hours, I say this all the time, it's like, oh my God, it feels like a commitment, a serious commitment. But 1.5 hours for some reason, you're like, man, that's like barely longer than an episode of The Walking Dead or something like that. So, if you're looking for something shorter and fun, it's just a really good pick, and I highly recommend it. I would absolutely watch it again. So, I think this has been an amazing pick, Kevin, for your first Spooky Bestie series.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm so happy that you enjoyed this one, and I'm glad that I got to talk about this with you on the, in the wake of the Final Girl support group. And I just I love analyzing horror in this way, and I think Leslie Vernon is a fun way to do that. So there's a good chance a lot of you listening to this have never seen this. Go seek it out. It's a fun one, and funny story, Jules. This is an influence on me for my projects that I'm working on this year. That feature film that you're gonna star in for me that we've talked about, very much inspired by this one. And then also the screenplay for the short film that I gave to you and Nikki for Valentine's Day as a surprise. Also very inspired by Leslie Vernon. So.
Oh, I love that. It's a good one to be inspired by. I can see why. So, can't wait to dive into these projects. I actually have my script right beside me. So we'll keep everyone posted on those types of things coming your way. You're gonna have some original MTP horror shorts to watch.
Absolutely. And follow the episodes that we do each month to hear more about it. I'm sure we'll be talking about it as once we get past all the fun productions that CAF is doing for the first half of the year, we'll have time to work on the other stuff. But Jules, thanks for joining me for this episode. This was a lot of fun. I'm very happy that you enjoyed this movie, and so we'll go ahead and do some quick plugs. We have a lot to talk about. There's a very specific thing we want to touch on here, but can you tell the people what our beloved Charleston's Absent Friends is up to? Might be easier to say what
Oh
we're not up
man.
to.
I know. What are we not doing at this point? We are blessed this year. So,
Very much
very
so.
appreciative. But we obviously Rocky Horror, we do it every month over at Terrace Theater. We have our Mardi Gras show coming up in March. Follow us on socials, Instagram, Facebook, Charleston's Absent Friends. We also have our website, charlestonsabsentfriends.org. We are a nonprofit 501c3. So we're just in the process of collecting donations and getting grant money and fundraising to try to get a community arts center here in the Charleston area for people of all kinds who need a safe space to be themselves. That's the heart of our mission. But Mardi Gras is coming up, and then we also have Princess Bride. We'll be performing that at the new Goose Creek Amphitheater. We're also going to perform Princess Bride at Atomicon. So I highly recommend y'all looking up Atomicon. It's a local con right here in Charleston, put on by so many wonderful and talented people. There's a film festival, there's going to be panels, there is a celebrity author. We're performing. It's just a good time. So highly recommend checking that out. We also have the debut of our first play, A Midsummer Night's Dream, also at the amphitheater in June. And then we're debuting another new shadow cast this year. It is The Room, and Kevin is the assistant director, and I get to play Johnny, which I'm very excited about. And Kevin will be my Mark. So I'm super excited about that. And then we're going to do, it's kind of up in the air, but we're also going to do something spooky, maybe around October with the amphitheater as well. Who knows what we're going to dig into with that. Twilight has been tossed around, but we'll see. So that's kind of still up in the air, but literally a jam-packed year. So please come out and join us if y'all need a space to celebrate the weird, the creepy horror. If you want to make friends, if you want a space to be yourself, that's what we're all about. So we'd love to meet you.
Absolutely. And you know me, I'll take any opportunity in person, between the two of us or on the show, any opportunity I get to just verbally say thank you, Jules, for all that you do. There's a lot of people that work on CAF stuff and MTP stuff, but you're at the the forefront essentially of CAF and are always doing, a million and one things to give people opportunities to feel safe and explore, anything they want to explore within themselves or creativity wise. So I always just want to take any opportunity on the show to say thank you.
Well, I accept your thanks and I give it right back to you. And I say thank you as well for all the same things, literally the exact same, just on the MTP side. So we are two halves of the same coin, much like the final girl and the killer. So who's who? I don't really know in this relationship. It depends on the day, I think.
I don't know. Maybe that'll be another cosplay, much like the one we're doing this weekend. This episode will be coming out after, but I'll go ahead and talk about what we're doing this Friday as we're recording this on Wednesday, February 26th. But this will give you a heads up if you are looking to catch MTP live. So Friday, February 28th, Jules and I will have done another live event with MTP. It is Love at First Fright. It's Valentine's Day month, and we will have talked about some love, jealousy, and killer couples, which you will hear on the feed. Those episodes will be live. We will have dressed as Chucky and Tiffany for that event, which I thank Jules right now because one of the movies I watched for the first time for that event was Bride of Chucky, which was just a gem of a movie. I loved it.
You want to talk about comfort movies? I had that on VHS as a child. Okay. That is an ultimate comfort movie for me.
Beautiful. But if you like the sound of those episodes, which will come out on the feed, our next one will be in April. We'll have the date out on socials later on. But the MTP live events are just always fun. There's always a theme, very much like CAF's Rocky shows. Again, pretty much the same crowd. All our friends are always there. You can come be vocal at the live events and have a good time with us and just, leave the world behind for a bit and talk some horror with us and have a good laugh. There's always something absurd going on at these events. So if you've never been to one, I can't recommend them enough, just as a fun space to celebrate horror. And speaking of celebration, the last thing we want to plug, and part of the reason we wanted to do all these plugs at the end of the episode is because y'all remember a little thing called Best of Charleston from last year. Well, Jules, CAF and MTP are up for their respective categories again. We are finalists. Charleston's Absent Friends, Best Performing Arts Group, Midnight Terrors Podcast, Best Local Podcast. We are in the finalist round for this. We are final performance groups for these
We are the
categories.
final girls. We are among the
Yes.
final girls in our respective categories. What an honor. I mean, I just want to say thank you. We never expect to win these things. Just being nominated and being put into the finals, like we've already won. I mean, it means absolutely everything to us. We're both nonprofits. MTP is also a nonprofit and is working on the final steps to make that official. So we're just trying to do some good in the world, and we want to connect with people. And a way that we can do that is getting the word out there about the safe spaces and the communities that we're building. So stay on the lookout. We'll be posting the links everywhere for you to vote for CAF and MTP. We'd appreciate it so much. And here's to 3 weeks of finals and votings and pure chaos. It's what we live for.
Absolutely. So when this episode comes out, we will have the links to vote for Charleston's Absent Friends and Midnight Terrors podcast. Those will be down in the description. They'll be all over the socials for both groups. So be sure to check that out. Again, like Jules said, we do all this stuff to bring people together and have fun and just give people a place to make friends and relationships and just be themselves and have fun. So, if you enjoy what we do with either of these projects, we would love and be honored to have your vote and support. So be on the lookout for that. We look forward to more things to come. And Jules, thank you again for joining me. I know we did quick plugs on Charleston's Absent Friends, but where can people check CAF out on across all the socials to keep up with what CAF is up to?
Oh, yeah. Well, Instagram and Facebook, those are our main ones. Just Charleston's Absent Friends, those stay updated all the time. And then if you want to learn a little bit about us, who we are, what we stand for, our history, see some sexy pictures of me and Kevin, you can head over to charlestonsabsentfriends.org and learn a little bit about us there.
Absolutely. And then if you want to get in touch with MTP, you can find us on Facebook under Midnight Terrors Podcast. You can check out our link tree under Midnight Terrors Podcast that has all our links to our T Public store and our socials. You can shoot us an email at midnightterrorspodcast@gmail.com. And of course, you can join our Facebook group. Jules and I are in there always. There's always fun horror talk going on, fun games and questions and things like that. So, great way to get connected with your co-hosts and just all members of the MTP family. So, be sure to come hang out with us. And if you're around, catch us at a live event. We would love to meet you. But that's it for the Midnight Terrors podcast. We will see you all again next month for the third installment of the Spooky Bestie series. I'm going to just run with that title. I love it. So I'm excited for Ghost Ship next month.
Ghost Ship. Give me a reason to watch it for the I don't even know how many
All
times. So, all right, guys, catch you next month and see you at the live event.
right. Love you all. We'll see you again soon. Peace.